Hello, my name is Dana Kay, and my favorite thing is stand-up comedy.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. This week, I have a great interview with Dana Kay. Dana is a book publicist and stand-up comedian in Chicago. And we are talking all about stand-up comedy. I thought Dana's was an appropriate interview for this week because on Friday night, one of my favorite stand-ups, Jackie Cation, was back in Chicago at the Lincoln Lodge. So I got a group together. I count eight from our group that made plans to see Jackie. And we had a blast. She had a great opener. The new Lincoln Lodge, it's not that new, but the Lincoln Lodge on Milwaukee and Armitage is really a fantastic little venue. Three spaces. We were in the large room, 110 seats, very uncomfortable stools. If you go, refuse to sit at a high top unless you're at a high top bench. But other than the comfortableness of the chairs, it was an outstanding night. Really great to see Jackie after so many years of COVID and listening to her on her podcast and not getting to see her on stage. It was a really outstanding night. I also this weekend went back to the Mahomet Soda Festival with my sister, with Jasmine, my nephew Quinn, a friend of my sister's, Rachel, and we just sat in the shade, drank craft soda, listened to blues bands, ate barbecue, and the Soda Festival continues to be like the platonic ideal of a street festival. It's so nice to be at a festival where everybody's not falling down drunk because there's no alcohol. It feels very Stars Hollow, straight out of Gilmore Girls. But it was a really fun time this week. And then I capped the weekend off by getting my new bivalent COVID booster. So I think that was... it's my fifth or sixth COVID vaccine because I'm immunocompromised. I was permitted to get it early. If you haven't gotten a bivalent booster yet at all, well, go get one. And if you are over 65 or immunocompromised, if one of your medicines puts you at risk, if you have asthma, there's a whole lot of things that qualify people for a booster now. And they said that this will carry me through to flu season. So that was what I had this weekend. So something that I say I'm going to do on an episode I haven't released yet, go figure, is start reading reviews that I've gotten on the podcast, because I really would appreciate. I'm heading into year four. I just checked. June 21st is the anniversary, and I'm really looking for more feedback, more reviews, more recommendations, people that you want to hear interviewed, please send them my way. But one of the things I thought I would do is read a review that I got on Apple Podcasts. So this is from May 15th, 2023, from ChatGPT. So I don't know who it's from. Subject line, brilliant idea. Leah's approach to having creative people talk about things they like is brilliant. Half the time, the joy of the show is learning about the guests' work, even as the guests dive deeply into fascinating recommendations. If you're looking for a train of inspiration, check it out. I'll take it. So please head over to Apple Podcasts or your rating review app of choice. Leave me a five-star review. Shoot me an email, findingfavoritespodcast@gmail.com. And that is, so findingfavoritespodcast@gmail.com. If you have comments about the podcast, if there are guests that you hope I would have on, I'm here for your recommendations. And without any further ado, let's get into this conversation about stand-up comedy with Dana Kay. Wear your mask, wash your hands, get your bivalent booster, and keep enjoying your favorite things. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. Tonight, I am joined by Dana Kay. Dana is a Chicago-based entrepreneur. She is the founder of Kay Publicity, a PR agency. When we met probably 10 or 15 years ago, we were both doing a little bit more work with authors, and we'll learn more about that. But Dana, how are you doing?
Everything's been good. We were just chatting before we got in here. There's never a dull moment in the world of PR. So everything is still exciting.
It is always one of like the top five or top 10 most stressful jobs in the US. When you look at those lists.
Luckily, we work with authors and we're not in crisis PR, mm-hmm. Although some of our authors might feel that there are crises related to their books. So luckily, most of our days are not running around making crazy calls, putting out fires. Many of us spend a lot of our days reading, which is a really great thing.
That's wonderful. That's a wonderful way to spend your time. I talked to... gosh, now maybe 2 years ago, one of your colleagues about fountain pens.
Haley Desort.
Haley. And then when Christmas came around that year and my sister asked me what I wanted, I was like, please listen to Haley's interview and buy me a beginner pen. So I did start my fountain pen collection with some of her. It's not a collection. It's just a pen right now, but it was based on her recommendation.
Well, and that's the beauty of this podcast, right? We learn about so many cool things.
It is. It is. There's a lot of things as you like movies, books, especially because I interview so many authors and I don't read as much as I did pre-pandemic. Somehow the pandemic, I'm not alone in having my brain broken by it and making it very difficult to read. But I've embraced audiobooks and spend a lot of time listening podcasts and audiobooks now.
That was something that I changed during the pandemic too, because I read obviously a lot for work, but I also want to read for pleasure. That's why I got into this business. But audiobooks were something that I never entertained prior. And I was listening to so many podcasts. I'm a runner, so I go on lots of long runs, and I was listening to podcasts, which are great, but I was like running out of them. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I wonder if I could do an audiobook. And my long runs with an audiobook was really how I was able to tap into audio. I still have difficulty listening to audio driving because I, with good reason, am paying attention to the road. But when I'm walking the dog or when I'm folding laundry or running, I really love audiobooks.
Nice. Do you have favorite narrators that you'll go looking for and listen to books that are read by specific people?
So I still have difficulty with fiction. So most of the audiobooks I listen to are narrated by the author.
Okay.
So I listen to a lot – we'll segue into what we'll chat about. I listen to a lot of comedian memoirs. Mm-hmm. lots of memoirs in general. Right now I'm listening to Maggie Smith's – now I'm blanking on the title. It Could All Be Beautiful. Something like that. But her new
It'll be linked in the show notes and in the bookshop.
Maggie Smith, her new memoir.
Dame Maggie Smith?
What's that? The writer, the poet.
The poet, not the British actress.
Not the British actress.
Okay, all right.
Dame Maggie Smith. She would be a great audiobook narrator, though.
Right?
That would be interesting. But I read like a lot of comedian biographies. I read a lot of memoir. Educated by Tara Eastover was a great audiobook. Oof.
So with that one, I did listen to that one. Here's how I felt. Like, one, she read the book. She wrote the book. You know, because she's reading the book that's in your ears and there are chapters coming that she survived the climbing on the mountain of trash and cutting her leg. There were so many scenes that I'm like, I don't know if you're going to live, even though I'm listening to her. And she wrote the book, which is proof that there's a life at the end of the book, right? What a well-written memoir.
Mm-hmm. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that got me through. I listened to that. I was training for the marathon this past summer. So that was, I listened to that on my long, on two of my long runs. So it was like, wow. I did it in like two sessions.
Right.
Because they were like four, I think it was, I think the book was like 10 hours maybe. Yeah. And like, yeah, it was really, it was so compelling. And also if I'm out there running 22 miles and she's keeping me so gripped that like, I'm not even paying attention to
right.
it. Yeah. I felt really good.
Yeah. That was, I feel like there's one other memoir I listened to recently where I felt the same way, but I was just like, well, there's no way she's going to survive this. Literally, I'm listening to her. I don't know if you've listened to Casey Rose Wilson's memoir.
No, I haven't.
Hers is wonderful. And then I also just listened to, boy, I guess I am listening to a lot of memoirs. Jeanette McCready's, I'm Glad My Mom Died.
Dead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was another one, honestly, with stories where I'm like, I don't think she gets out of this chapter alive.
Right.
She wrote the book.
But that's yeah. a great memoir is a compelling, suspenseful story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just someone sitting and pontificating on their life. It's a really good story.
Yeah.
And speaking of favorite things, do you use the Libby app for your audiobooks?
I use Libby and Audible.
Yeah.
So
I love Libby
mm-hmm.
because you can get them out of the library. You just have to be patient with some of them mm-hmm. because the popular ones are on hold. But you can always find something. And I also use, Chirp. Chirp sends discounted audiobooks. So you can get audiobooks for like 99 cents, $1.99.
Nice.
So if it's something that I think I'm going to listen to again, I'll get it from there. But yeah, I love the Libby app. It's been so great. It's more economical for listening to lots of audiobooks.
Absolutely. I think if I had a longer commute or I was not as into podcasts as I am, I would, right now I just do like one Audible credit a month. And it doesn't matter how many times I cancel it. I seem to be completely ineffective at that. I keep canceling it in the wrong place. And then it's like, you have six credits. And I'm like, okay, time to go buy books. Right now I'm listening to Ringmaster by Abraham Josie Reisman.
I'm not familiar with that.
Vince McMahon and the Unmaking of America. It's a Vince McMahon biography, but also like sociological look at, essentially, if you want to understand the Republican Party today, you have to understand wrestling and kayfabe and like the rules of wrestling in America as created by Vince McMahon and literally how Trump fits into that. And it's so compelling. Josie wrote an amazing text. So it's up there. This is my last recommendation. This is also essentially like all the books I've listened to this year. But the Mike Nichols biography was amazing because Mike Nichols was kind of like the real life Forrest Gump of pop culture. Between Hollywood and Broadway and Second City, like all of the pieces of pop culture that he had a hand in and realizing it was like one person. It was really also very compelling.
Oh, I love that. I'll have to check that one out. We seem to listen to similar books because
yeah.
the thing with nonfiction that I find easier is like if I space for a second, I didn't miss something like really important. Like I can't listen to like thrillers or even romance or any of those because again, there's something different about the way I consume it. I need to know that like if I miss a piece, I'm not going to be completely lost.
Right, right.
And I also think memoir or biography, like if they're reading, like the Alan Cumming's memoir about his mm-hmm. father was him reading it was so beautiful and compelling. I couldn't not listen to it.
And he has a beautiful accent too.
Oh, yes, he does. Love listening to that man's voice.
Yeah. What? So we're going to talk more about comedy. Are there, what are some comedian memoirs that you've listened to?
I've listened to a lot. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorites are Ali Wong's recent one, Dear Girls. Mm-hmm. Really, really loved her, giving her a really like hard look at what it's like to be a woman in comedy, mm-hmm. and what it takes to like be in comedy. Because I think people think it's really glamorous and exciting. And to be a professional comedian is a grind. It's like a really hard grind. And she gave a really good look at it. And I liked the format of her addressing it to her daughters. Mm-hmm. It gave a really nice sense of audience. There was a directiveness. That's not a word. I just make it up. But there, something about the way it was directed at somebody made it feel like it was being read to you in a way. So that was really good. I really enjoyed Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally's The Greatest Love Story Ever Told. And they...
Do they alternate chapters?
They sure do.
Okay.
They both narrate it. And the funniest thing is the book itself has pictures in it, which they can't get in the audiobook. And so they describe the pictures, which is even better.
That's amazing.
But they also gave, again, a behind-the-scenes look at what it was like coming up in Chicago theater, which, like, I really enjoy Chicago theater background, like that sort of thing. She was and the way he talks about her was just, you know, there's a lot of, especially in comedy, there's a lot of toxic masculinity, a lot of egos. And he just puts her up on this pedestal and talks about how amazing she is and how talented she is and how much he learned from her. And I thought that was just a really beautiful, really beautiful insight into their relationship. So it was not only... It was a great combination of funny and also really heartfelt.
Yeah.
And let's see. Some of them, again, there's some that are better than others. I love Jim Gaffigan. He's one of my favorite comedians. Mm-hmm. Dad is Fat was an extension of his comedy. So like if you like his comedy, you'll like the memoir. It wasn't anything like new or profound.
Sure.
And Tiffany Haddish is Black Unicorn. Was really good. I really enjoyed learning more about, again, some of it was familiar because some of it plays into her comedy, but there was a lot more about her background, about her relationship with Judaism, being Black. Like there was a lot there. And again, she narrates, and she was a great narrator. Now I'm going to go, I can keep going.
It's a good list. It's a good place to get started.
I think the other one was Lovey. I apologize because I don't say these names out loud. Lovey Ajayi. Mm-hmm. And I like a lot of her writing, but she – oh, gosh. And now I'm going to blank, of course, on the title. It will come to me.
Troublemaker is the recent one, right?
This was the older one.
Okay.
White cover, black writing. I could look it up. But those were more essays. It was more of an essay collection. Mm-hmm. And same thing. It was like humor, but like – she sheds light on some like darker situations or some very serious topics. And yet I'm laughing. And I think that's a really cool thing that people do. It's like, I'm listening to something that's like kind of dark, like kind of problematic, probably traumatic for her or family. Mm-hmm. And yet I'm laughing and empathizing at the same time.
Yeah.
So I thought that she has a really good knack for doing that.
It's I'm judging you. The Do Better Manual.
Yes, I'm judging you.
Yeah. She's a long time. I followed her for so long. I forget sometimes that she's also like that she's even Chicago because she's to me like such a big figure that like and has always been that. When I realize like, oh my gosh, I could like run into her. I haven't yet. But yeah, I love that she's a Chicago writer.
Well, and I think a lot of these folks, like, especially the there's so many great comedians who came out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Like, this comedy scene here is so rich, and it's so different than New York and LA. And so I do think it is interesting whenever I'm listening to biographies, how many, or memoir, how many of them have ties to Second City, mm-hmm. to IO, to all of these comedy institutions. And, yeah. you know, you think of them as being New York or LA, but many of them have been here at a time.
Yeah. We're not, although I'm pretty sure we could do it for a full hour, just here to trade audiobook recommendations. We're also here to talk about your favorite thing. And what is that?
I love stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I love stand-up comedy. It's awesome. Something that I've loved since probably before I knew what it was, mm-hmm. right? Like, I love telling jokes. I love humor. I love listening to people tell jokes. And so stand-up comedy is something I've always loved, but something I've reconnected with post-pandemic.
Yeah. So do you want to talk about your origin story with stand-up, or do you want to start with a little bit about going to open mics and doing comedy yourself?
Here's the thing about comedy. So I'll start by saying, ever since I was able to write, I was a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that I've always loved writing. I would, from the time I was a little kid, I would write letters, I'd write poems, loved a good limerick, like my mom yeah. has lots of little limericks that I would write. And there was some serious writing, but there was a lot of humor throughout, mm-hmm. you know, the little short stories I made up in fourth and fifth grade, I went to school for creative writing, lots of humor in my creative writing program, the work that I did there. And so writing jokes and doing stand-up is just another form of writing, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just, and not everyone does it this way. I write out all my jokes. I scribble and do stream of consciousness. I know some people just talk it out. I can't yeah. do that. But it's writing and it's editing. And so I think when I was in college and just after college, I was focusing on writing novels, writing books, writing freelance articles, writing short stories, more, you know, narrative, prose, long form yeah. stuff. And then in 2009, I launched my PR company. And then my writing turned to email marketing and press mm-hmm. releases and pitch emails. So you're still writing. It's just very different. Yeah. And after being at a computer all day, there was little to no part of me that wanted to continue being on a computer to write more.
Yeah.
And so creative writing, you know, just kind of any sort of short stories I was working on, novels, just kind of got pushed aside. And I loved what I was doing, so that was totally fine.
Yeah.
But then now the years are all kind of a blur, but I want to say in about 2014, 2015, I wanted to have a creative outlet because I missed in from college, like we had the semicircle. We all sit in the semicircle. We'd read our work. We'd get immediate feedback. Mm-hmm. I missed that. And I thought stand-up would be something that would give me that. And it is. Like, there's no other venue there's no other medium that I could write something right now and go mm-hmm. to three different open mics. Like, yep. it's 7 o'clock. I know three different ones I could walk into on a Monday night and get feedback yeah. immediately. No one else does that, right? You write a book, you might have peer feedback, but like your editor takes a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, your reader, it takes a year to get published. Like, you're writing it, you don't know if it's good. And like, I can just walk out, go on into a bar or a bookshop or whatever and stand in front of a mic, tell these jokes and get immediate feedback.
Right.
And so that's really what I was yearning, was that being in a room with people again and writing. So at that time, I was doing some open mics. I was doing some stuff. I did some stuff with Lincoln Lodge, mm-hmm. Which was really fun. And then, this must have been 2014 because then my son was born in 2014.
Okay.
So it was before then. And then when he was born, I took a break because you have a small human yeah. to care for. So any sort of extracurricular activities go out the window for a little bit.
Yeah. And there's no – or very little. When I did stand-up comedy, there was no afternoon stand-up, afternoon open mic, so it's all late nights out away from home. So it is taking a lot of time away from being at home.
Yeah, and no sleep. So yeah. It's like you might go to a 9 o'clock open mic, but then at 1 a.m. you're getting a wake-up call because someone needs to eat.
Yep.
And yeah, I was just so dog tired. Not to mention in 2015 I got a book deal to write a PR book, a book about a book about publicizing your book. So that all my writing went to that.
Yeah.
During the pandemic, okay, mommyhood, running a business, all these things.
Yeah.
But then during the pandemic, I don't know about you, but I was a little stressed. Mm-hmm. I had lots of anxiety, lots of people in my house. I'm suddenly running a business and homeschooling a kindergartner.
Right.
And everything was a little stressful. You know, people are dying and getting sick and all of these things. And so I did start writing again because, of course – why do we make jokes to make light of really stressful and traumatic situations?
Yep.
And so I started writing again, and I was starting to fill up notebooks and of jokes. But the difference is because it was the pandemic, I wasn't going to go to a bar and tell them.
Right.
Zoom comedy was not, it's not, it didn't work.
Not for you.
I don't think it was for anybody. I don't know anyone who's like, I loved doing comedy shows on Zoom. I have yet, if you're a comedian who loved Zoom, like let me know. But so then it was about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago, where I said, okay, like I'm like have four shots, like three or four shots now. Like I'm ready to venture back. Mm-hmm. And I started doing at least one open mic a week, and that was my like kind of touchstone, because if I did at least one a week, I would keep writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have new material, and if I did more than one, I would be able to like try it out on a different room or try more jokes or all those things. So it has been over a year. We're in May. Over a year since I got back into it, and I still go to at least one, but usually two, usually in one night. Like I'll usually hit like an afternoon one and then go to a later one. The comedians I hang with are great at peer pressuring me to go to one more. I always laugh. I'm like, they're like, are you going to the next one? I'm like, it is 10 o'clock. My night is over. And then they'll be like, but there's one just like 5 minutes away. You don't want to go one more? I'm like, okay, maybe. I'm out. I mean, to me at this age, there's no difference between getting home at 11 and getting home at 1, honestly.
Right.
It's all awful. And so it has been really good to practice this craft of short form humor writing where you can get this immediate feedback, because I could tell this, you know, if I go to a mic and I do a set, I usually film it because I sometimes blackout on stage, like I don't hear the laughs in the right way.
Well, and sometimes some rooms the laughs go up and they don't go forward to the stage, so
that's absolutely true.
Yeah,
that's a good point. That's a really good point. So yeah, so I film it video or audio. I'll like listen to it in the car, be like, okay, this is what hit, this is what didn't hit, and then I'll go to another mic right after, try the exact same set but tweak it slightly,
yeah,
and see if it hits differently.
And
you do get the comedians that I know and the ones that I listen to their memoirs, like they all say about this high of like, you try this joke in different ways and you keep tweaking it and editing it. And then when it hits and you do it a few times in the same way and it keeps hitting, that feels really good. So like I have a solid like 20 minutes that I'm like, these will hit. I know they will. Nice. At least for now, I guess, right? Time changes and things change.
Right. Yeah. And eventually you get tired of jokes.
That is absolutely true. That's absolutely true. I also like you kind of some of the jokes, like I went back to my notebooks from before I was a parent. And I was laughing because half of my jokes were about not being a parent.
Right.
You know, which some of them still hold true. Like I hold that, you know, my dog takes as much work as my child. I still stand by that. And that it's not fair that I can bring my kid into restaurants, but I can't bring my dog sitting nicely in a baby Bjorn on my chest into a restaurant. She's much more well behaved. but yeah, you kind of like grow out of them in a way. I also got divorced, and I also left because so many of my solid jokes had to do about being married. I'm like, goodbye, all those right. Not telling those anymore.
Yeah.
But luckily, divorce is really great comedy fodder. So I have lots of new jokes. Being on dating apps at the age of almost 40.
they're the worst. They're the worst.
Lots of material, though. It was worth it.
He's the literal worst. But I'm not an asshole, so I won't slander him publicly, but I will in every group chat.
But it's just—it's not just as satisfying, but it's still satisfying.
Still pretty satisfying, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, going back to dating apps is—they're brutal.
Going back, I never was on one.
Oh.
I was never on one. I met my ex when I was 20.
Okay.
And so, no, I was never on apps. And so my friends had to teach me. I got catfished so much because, like, I had no idea. Oh, sorry. I had no idea. They were like, this is a bot. You're talking to a bot. I was like, what do you mean there's bots? Like, I don't know. I was this, like, naive little person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, my friends had to teach me, like, you need verified profiles. This is what to look for. If they ask you to get on WhatsApp, it's a bot. Like, I don't know. I was just this naive, naive person. I found it. Here's the thing about the apps. And again, it's different. We were talking about this a little bit before I came on. I had a great life with my ex. I have a son. I'm like, have a good job. Like, I'm super happy.
Yeah.
And like, if anyone wants to come into my life and it's additive, great. But I didn't like need it. And so I think that's what made it like not as high stakes. Like,
sure.
I went on a few dates and just like, you know, if it wasn't a connection, I just say right there, I'm like, it was nice meeting you. I didn't feel a connection, but good luck.
Right.
And they were just like shocked. Like, I would just say that. I'm like, no, there's no reason.
Right.
I actually ended up meeting a good friend. We like acknowledged that there's no romantic relationship here, but I'm like, but can we be friends?
Yeah.
It's very lesbian. But like, but it was just interesting. Like I don't play games. Like I don't have any, like, I have no game. There's like no game. And so to see like the reading between the lines of like what people's profiles were, like I didn't know any of that. So that was a whole learning experience, or what red flags are. Right? I was like, I don't know.
Right.
I don't know. So it was a little different. It was fun. I met some good people. Some of them were for me. Some of them weren't.
Yeah. So you're going back. It's one open mic a week minimum, writing, getting that feedback. Because you are like really secure in your professional life, do you have goals of doing an hour of what do you have? Is your stand-up goal met by writing weekly, getting feedback, and is that enough for you, or are you interested in something bigger? Do you want to be the next Leslie Jones?
Oh, Leah Jones and Leslie Jones. that's a good, that would be huge. I feel like you and I have very similar mindsets around like businessy things, and it's very hard for people like me and you maybe to like just have a hobby.
Yes.
Like it's so hard because we need to like have, like we're working towards something.
Yes.
And monetizing, and what are we doing this for?
Mm-hmm.
So I will say, like, so first and foremost, I would like this to just be a creative outlet. Like,
okay.
I would love it. Look, if Netflix comes knocking on my door and is like, hey, we want you to do an hour long special with Leslie Jones, like, or if you want to like tour with anyone.
Yeah.
For sure. I would not say no.
If Allie calls, say yes, when and where.
Exactly.
Okay.
I'll open for her and whatever, whenever, wherever. But I didn't want this to be associated with like a thing. Like I didn't want this to be like, if I'm not, another recommendation, Elizabeth Gilbert in Big Magic talks about this, that once your art is feeding you, you have a different relationship with your art.
Yep.
And I didn't want this to feed me. Like I didn't want me to feel, I didn't want to feel like my worth or my success or my talent was wrapped up in compensation, how many times I'm booking shows, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So all that to say is like, I don't want this to be a career. That's not the end goal. However, when you get booked for open mics, you have 4 and 5 minute sets. That's not a lot of time. When you get booked for shows, you're booking for like showcases where you get like 10 to 20 minutes. Someone wants to give me a full hour. Like I need to work on that. I don't have a full hour.
Right.
But like the, like, so to me, the goal of getting on those bigger stages and getting showcases is more about time, right? It's more about like more time on stage, more time perfecting things. Like if you're getting booked, you should be giving your good jokes and not working on things. But even just things like you can't do crowd work at an open mic.
Right.
You can, but it doesn't work that well. And so even just having those types of opportunities. So I think the end goal for me is like if I was able to book like a handful of showcases this year, that would be kind of like a success to me. Like I said, just because you get more time. I like we were talking about earlier, I'm an early riser. I'm not a night owl. Like if I'm doing a show, like I get wrecked the next day. Like I'm just signing up to have a really terrible day the next day. Hopefully I did enough for like riding a high. But that's the other piece of it too is like if I can do like one night a week, if I can go to two, sometimes three, that's a lot. But if I can go to at least two in one night, get like some good feedback and do all that, then like I can have a somewhat normal life. But in order to get booked, the comedians I know, like they're going to at least 5 or 6 mics a night, or excuse me, a week. And they're going strategically to mics where bookers are because they want to get seen. And that's also not how I live my life. Like there's a room that I think that the producer is super skeezy, so I don't go there.
Yeah.
But he has a room and he puts on shows and particularly young women go there to be seen because hoping that he will book them because that's their livelihood, right? Like they need to get booked. I'm glad that I'm in a position where I don't need to do that. I can say, you're kind of gross. I'm not coming to your room anymore. And there's plenty of other rooms I can go to, but I don't, like I said, I don't need to get booked.
So I did stand up in my 20s. When I first moved to Chicago, so like 02 to 04-ish. And ultimately for me, it was auditioning for the first season of Last Comic Standing and spending 6 hours in daylight with the Chicago comedy scene. And I was like, you know what? I don't think these are my people. These can be my coworkers for the rest of my life. So that was part of it, because this was also peak gross out rape culture. Like the jokes were that I saw every night were horrible, like so mean spirited. And also that like by that point I had direct deposit and a day job and had to be somewhere at 8:30 every morning. And I was like, it turns out I like health insurance and direct deposit more than pursuing this like path towards stardom, right?
Right.
And then when I got laid off and I was 40 and I went back to open mics for a few months, I was just like, oh my gosh, now I'm like the old person in the room. I remember the old women when I was in my 20s. And I couldn't quite wrap my head around, and you've gotten there, of like, I can use this space for a creative outlet without the same professional goals as the other people in this space. And I couldn't get there.
It's hard. And so the first time I went to there's a mic that I really like called Take a Shot Open Mic. And mm-hmm. They do three open mics and they pick finalists that will compete for a spot. I believe it's either Zany's or Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And you get some cash. So it's like a competition. And I remember doing that mic and not getting picked as a finalist and feeling so devastated. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why are you devastated? Your set was good. Yeah. Like, your set was really good. I like watched it. I was like, nope, you hit your marks. It was good. You had good jokes. It was good. Other people were just better. Or it's a taste thing, right? Like,
right.
You know, the 20-year-old dudes who are judging might like other 20-year-old dudes more than yep. like, you know, the mom jokes from the 40-year-old. But like and then once I got past that, you have those little humps of like, you don't need that. Mm-hmm. You don't need the spot on Laugh At. You don't need that validation. That's what it right. is. You wanted to feel validation. And so I have been able to do away with the external validation mm-hmm. other than like getting laughs, right? Like I want laughs.
Yes.
Like that's how yes. you figure out if it's good or not. But yeah. the validation of like getting chosen to be on a showcase, right? Like I see showcases and I see people who in my opinion, aren't as funny as me getting booked, mm-hmm. but they're grinding it out and right. you know, respect to them. Right. So they're going to get exposure and they're going to get booked on shows that I might not get on because I just am not at every open mic or every right. show networking and grinding. And so I agree. I also think Leah, like in the early 2000s, like, it was also a very different landscape. Like, I cannot tell you how many of the comedians I'm friendly with are sober. I can't right. tell you how many, like, more queer comedians and female comedians. Like, it's such a more diverse and supportive place. I was laughing because I went to – there's a mic I love, Living Room Sessions. Mm-hmm. And either the first or the third Sunday, it's – women and non-binary only. Mm-hmm. And so I went from like, so I was at that mic. It was a great mic. And my friend texted is like, hey, are you coming to Will's at Northwoods Inn or whatever?
Yeah.
Of course, peer pressure. Sure. Why not? It's only like 5 minutes away. So I go there. So I went from like this all women mic to like the sausage fest of the century. It was like yeah. 30 bros, mostly white bros. But what I – so I was like when – so what for those who don't know at these mics, they put the list out at a certain time. And the protocol is you sign up in the order that you came. You get in line. It's not bum rushing the list. You sign up in the order that you came. So to see these gentlemen line up so respectfully, talking to each other like, hey, man, I think you got here before me. Like I'll go back here. Oh, I was here before. Yeah. And like – just sorting that out amongst themselves right. was so lovely. So I do think the culture has, at least, again, this might be a Chicago thing because we're Midwest and different.
Yeah.
I do think the culture has gotten a little better around yeah. drinking and drugs and competitiveness and ruthlessness in a way that they're not everyone, but there's I could count on like 15, probably 15 people, comics that I know from these mics that I'd be glad to consider my coworkers.
Yeah. Yeah. It was absolutely a different time. There was also like five open mics.
Truth.
There was like Sunday at Frankie J's, Monday at the Lion's Den, Tuesday at Cubby Bear. I don't know. And by Thursday it was like Lincoln Lodge and yeah. it wasn't an open mic anymore. Like there were really like four or five rooms and you would go and you would stay the whole night. Because there wasn't somewhere else to go. Mm. There just like weren't other open mics. So you would get up, you could go up like four times a week.
Wow.
And that was it. So yeah. unless you went to like a music open mic or like, mm-hmm. and just you're like, I'm going to sneak in at Spitless Musical Inn and do comedy and never come back because you all hated that, you know?
Yeah. Just go and tell jokes with the ukulele.
Right, right.
A triangle.
Oh, that tambourine lady's back.
Oh, damn.
That would be so good. So how about Did you grow up watching stand-up comedy? Or were you like a joke book kid?
Oh, I loved joke books.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Loved joke books. Grow up watching stand-up comedy. I don't know. I mean, we did not, my TV growing up had like a dial and antennas with foil on the ends. Like we didn't have cable, like none of that stuff. So like I think I was not allowed to watch Saturday Night Live, but I did. And I remember watching the monologues. I loved the monologues. Mm-hmm. Saturday Night Live was fine, but I loved watching the monologues.
Yeah.
And I would sometimes slip in and watch like The Late Show with my parents. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, joke books and things. I also, growing up, like many comedians, was an awkward kid who had really a lot of trouble making friends, had a lot of trouble fitting in. But guess what? I could make people laugh.
Yeah.
It was a really great in. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's also where, you know, a lot of good comedy comes from childhood trauma. And so and defense mechanisms. I always laugh. Like one of my friends was like, I'm just not that funny. I'm like, you had a really great childhood. What can I say? You never had to compensate. You can be funny
or you can have had friends.
Have friends. Like I had, like my parents were divorced. My parents were divorced. Like I was, shocked. I don't know if this is on film. Shockingly, I was a tomboy growing up. Mm-hmm. And so like little things like that were a little challenging. So I think that like growing up, I always liked using humor was always my in with people. Or if there was something emotional and stressful happening at home, I would try to liven it with humor.
Yeah.
But I loved joke books, loved telling jokes. I don't think I had a lot of exposure like television wise or like were they on the radio at the time? I don't even know. I feel like there were some comedians on the radio maybe.
There was. So my early exposure to stand-up comedy was one, we had a bootleg copy of Bill Cosby himself.
Oh.
Which I hate that we have learned the horrific things he did.
Yep.
I don't have it all memorized now, but, you know, like there was that it was he was at like Carnegie Hall, I think. It was a big it was Zuff Wuff Wiff Wuff Push Push. And like that was his labor piece. And there's like this amazing dentist piece about going to the dentist and like and there's a piece about like getting so drunk and getting hungover and talking to God on the porcelain telephone. Which is the toilet, right? So there was like this Bill Cosby special that we watched constantly. And then Comedy Central, the original version of Comedy Central was what MTV used to be like, but for stand-up comedy clips. Mm-hmm. So it was 3 to 4 minute chunks, and it would just be like Dana Carvey doing Chopping Broccoli, and then Ellen DeGeneres, and then 5 more male comics, and then Roseanne, you know, Connor, no, what, whatever, Roseanne.
Barr,
yeah. I'm like, Connor, I'm like, that's her TV name.
Yeah.
No, so it would just be, the original Comedy Central was just chunks of stand-up comedy, just tracks. Yeah. And I would watch that for hours. It was great.
If only I had cable as a child.
Yeah.
But you know what? Now that's TikTok, honestly.
It is.
Like my TikTok is just stand-up comics and lesbians because they see my profile picture. Like that's all it is.
Yeah.
But that's also an interesting thing of like how, like you were saying, Leah, like it's the medium at that time was – Comedy Central, and they would take these clips and then Comedy Central turned into, you know, sitcoms and shows and more produced things. But now comedians are putting their stuff on YouTube and Reels and TikTok and that's what it's become, right? Like that's if you want to see comedian, like little clips of comedians, like you can go to TikTok, add some, you know, hashtags or filters and get a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that's also the difference too. Like you were saying, like if Bill Cosby performed at Carnegie Hall, you had to be there to know those jokes. Unless right. you got a bootleg copy, like, you know, right. that Leah had the hookup. But I think that that's also different, right? Because now we're all pressured to, like, put stuff online or to put things out there. So, like, if you follow me on Instagram and you come to a show, you will see some jokes that you already know because they're yeah. out on Instagram. And that's okay because, again, it's a work in progress. You might not get the same version of the joke. It'll right. be tighter and tweaked. But – it's also this, it's a different medium where you're going to see people you're already familiar with mm-hmm. and that you have more access to, unlike, you know, the late 90s.
Yeah. Yeah. It's completely different. One of the podcasts I listen to is the Jackie and Lori show
mm-hmm.
with Jackie Cation and Lori Kilmartin. And they talk a lot about that, about, you know, what do you clip and put out on Instagram? Like, what do you share online? What do you keep for, what do you not share until it's been on an album? And I think there's an interesting conversation happening about, right, people do crowd work for TikTok because you're not burning jokes if you're sharing crowd work. But then audiences don't understand etiquette anymore. Like audiences mm-hmm. are losing their etiquette for attending comedy. And so how do you teach people that, like, more often than not, it's heckling and not a helpful comment, right? And I think there's something interesting there about you can get the juice you need on TikTok by doing and sharing crowd work. You're not burning up your jokes. But then people come, they expect you to be a crowd work comedian.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting, the idea of, quote, like, burning jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not we've established this. I'm not a professional. I'm doing it for craft. I actually don't know that it matters.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a little different. This isn't apples to apples. But, like, if I listen to a singer's album, and then I go see the show, it's the songs I know. I'm not expecting them right. to, like, pull a song, a new song that no one's ever heard of, right? Like, I'm going there to, like, get the experience of being live mm-hmm. and the familiarity.
Yep.
So if I'm – and look, I go to a lot of mics. I see the same jokes a lot.
Yeah.
Like, because it's comedians working on their stuff. And we're yeah. all – like, we literally – I said, like, I went to the 5 p.m. and then the 7 p.m. There's lots of people from that 5 p.m. who strut on down to the 7 p.m. It's just,
yeah.
like I just said, like, I'm literally doing the same set. So I've seen jokes over and over. But it's how you tell them. It's the energy of the room. You tweak it every time. You don't tell it in the same way. You don't tell it with the same transitions even. I think that even matters. Mm-hmm. So, like, some of the jokes I've told, and we talked about this a little bit, like, you know, when I was still married, I told jokes about being married. And then mm-hmm. when I got divorced, I now don't tell those married jokes anymore.
Right.
But the transitions of the more evergreen jokes that don't care about my marital status is irrelevant to them. But, like, even transitioning from one to the other feels different.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like I don't mind posting things and, like, quote, I don't think it's like burning, because if yeah. you see me live, it's going to be a different experience.
Yeah.
I'm going to be different. You're going to experience it differently. I think it's okay. And even if you know the punchline a little bit, you might hear it a little differently.
Yeah.
For me, anything, I put stuff that's timely too. So, like, I know a lot. I'm always impressed with the comedians who, like, are pulling out jokes about, you know, like the Chinese spy balloon. Everyone was doing jokes about that. That you only right. got a week for that.
Yep.
Right? Like, so you're going to, like, go to a bunch of open mics, get it perfect. And then, like, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
Put it on Instagram. Wait. It's fine.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, if you're worried about burning jokes, even also just doing anything that's timely and putting that on. Mm-hmm. But I actually don't care. I don't think it matters in the same way that people might think. Because I think even if I have heard the joke on Instagram or on TikTok and I go see the comedian's show, I'll probably laugh just as much because I know it's coming. And again, right. it's a different experience.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think it's Yeah, I just think it's I think all of these things are interesting about the craft, about what people expect. Right, because we don't expect musicians to play unless you're going to see Phish or a, literally a jazz band. But still, they start and end the songs. It's the middle that's improvised, yeah. Right? So we don't – there's nobody else that we expect to keep it all secret and not do any repeats. Even magicians. Like, magicians all share tricks and illusions, yep. Right? So
– it's how you deliver it.
Yeah.
I'll also say, too, what I've noticed is there's some jokes that work better on Instagram and TikTok than in an mm-hmm. audience. So like interesting. So I remember seeing a comedian who was like the headlining. Like, so these open mics will sometimes do like a featured comedian or a headlining mm-hmm. comedian. And she's big on TikTok. And I follow her on TikTok and she's great. But seeing her live, something about the delivery, the stage presence, like wasn't there. I was like, oh, you don't grind it out at open mics.
Mm-hmm.
You're on TikTok in the safety of your living room
right.
doing things. And that's different. Not better or worse, just different.
Yeah.
And there's things like that. I said a joke at an open. They gave everyone an extra minute. I was like, all right, I'm just going to pull something out. I don't have a punch or anything. And I said something and people were kind of like, like, I was like, okay, there might be something there. And then I go post it on Instagram, just like talking to the camera, like, hey, I was giving this some thought. And then I get tons of comments of like, oh right. my gosh, I always thought that. That's real funny, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. So like there's something there. Instagram told me there was something there.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have to actually work on the tags and work on the punchline and like right. actually craft it. So that's the other thing. It can kind of go both ways, that there's something that you can say on Instagram that gets a lot of comments, but it doesn't work. It doesn't necessarily work on a stage. Mm-hmm. And there's stuff that like, you stay on stage and it cracks people up, but you need that energy from the audience and it'll probably right. might fall flat online.
Right. And you need all the context of like everything that happened together in the room before you said it.
Right.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. The experience of the evening. Earlier you said that you're a morning person. Mm-hmm. And I did want to tell you that Maria Bamford just recorded her new hour. And she recorded it at 10:30 in the morning. And then had a pizza party afterwards for lunch.
Love that.
For everyone who came.
Love that.
I wish I had known. I mean, she filmed it in LA. She didn't film it here, but I just heard that. And I'm like, she's so willing and creative just to do. She just does exactly what she needs to with comedy. And I really admire that about her.
One of my favorite things to do, Second City does a brunch show on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
I love going to that show, get a Bloody Mary, watch some like sketch comedy. It's perfect. Perfect.
Nice. I don't know if I knew that they did that. And it's like Second City sketches.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Some of it's improv, but they mostly do sketches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything about stand-up comedy that I haven't asked you about that you wanted to make sure you mentioned?
I think that... For folks who I meet a lot of people who say, that's so scary, I could never do that.
Mm-hmm.
And my response is usually, you could, you just don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if you wanted to, you would just do it. And if you really do want to, you can do it. It's not, you have to be okay with quote unquote bombing.
Yeah,
but to be honest, I learn a lot more when jokes fall flat than if I tell a joke and it is like it lands and everyone laughs. I think it's funny. Could just be the room. I told a joke recently about being single and going on a. My therapist said to honor my being single in my 20s, so I went on a professionally sanctioned lesbian rumspringer for a few months, which was awesome. But I told a joke, that's a lead up to the joke, but I told mm-hmm. that joke and I got a lot of cheers and and claps and whatever. But I don't know if it's funny because I think people are just like happy for me, right?
Right.
And so you don't know if it's funny. If I told it and it bombed, I'm like, okay, that might not be funny. Yeah. So I think you have to be okay with going up there and hearing nothing and mm-hmm. you just say, well, that needs some work.
Yep.
Derek, who runs Shaker, the Shakers on Clark open mic. He always, Derek J, I think that's his name, Derek J. He always says, you can't bomb in an open mic because you're not getting paid. But you can do not so good. And so I always think about that. And so if folks, I think, first of all, if you're like, I could never do that, the answer I always is no, but you don't want to. Mm-hmm. If you don't really want to. If you really wanted to, you could. Yeah. And it's totally fine if you go up and no one laughs and you just deal with it. You'll see it all night. If you go to an open mic and just watch, you'll see them say things that aren't funny and no one laughs. So
yeah.
I think if it's something you want to do, you definitely can. And I think Chicago in particular is a really supportive town to do it in.
Nice. And where, if someone is like, okay, I'm going to go try a Chicago open mic, is there a central place that you look for them, or you just know where they are now? You know where your rooms are.
You just know all of the things.
You know all of them.
So there is an, if you are on Instagram, I was actually going to pull it up just to, so I can give you the exact handle. There is a Instagram called Chicago, I think it's dot open mics. Yes, Chicago dot open mics. And it has a living doc, a Google sheet, a living document of every open mic in Chicago and beyond. Wow. Chicago land. So that's how I do it. I generally just like, they always say like, call before you haul, mm-hmm. Make sure it's happening. But I usually just look, if I'm like, oh, it's Monday at, you know, what time is it? Monday at 7:30. What can I do? I'll go and pull up that sheet and just look at the time, look at the distance and see what I can go to. After you've done a few, you know your favorites. Mm-hmm. But that's a good place to start and to just start going to some. And then you'll meet people who will tell you about others. So like, yeah. I didn't know about the one at Northwoods. It's on there. I just never went until a buddy was like, hey, come through. So the comedians here, for the most part, are very supportive. We look out for each other. Mm-hmm. Like I had gotten messages from people asking if I was going to be at Shakers tonight. And I was like, no, I'm talking about comedy. I'm not going to do comedy tonight.
I'm going to talk about all of you behind your back and then yes. Publish the conversation.
So that's how I would get started is to, to just look at that, follow that Instagram account, look at the spreadsheet. And then they'll also post if something's canceled. Like if something gets canceled, they usually post to stories that one is canceled.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great. And where can people follow you online?
For comedy stuff, DanaKay23 on Instagram and TikTok. It's DanaKaye23. And if you're an author and you're wanting to know about like book publishing stuff, you're interested in publicity and PR, you can go to yourbreakoutbook.com.
Fantastic. Well, Dana, this has been a delight. Thank you so much for coming on Finding Favorites.
Oh, thanks for chatting with me. It was fun.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.